And still another view, another perspective into the assassination of John F. Kennedy. In a moment, our guest Joan Mellon, her book, A Farewell to Justice, about Jim Garrison, back in a moment on Coast to Coast Day Out. Joan Mellon is a professor in the Department of English at Temple University. She's an author, 17 books. In 2004, Temple University awarded her one of the most coveted Great Teacher Awards for outstanding achievement. Her latest book, A Farewell to Justice, Jim Garrison, JFK's Assassination of the Case That Should Have Changed History, begins with Jim Garrison's New Orleans investigation of the Kennedy assassination, with a biographical look at Jim Garrison, the man who was the figure who became the only public official ever to bring anyone connected with the murder of President Kennedy before the bar of justice. She's our guest on Coast to Coast. Joan, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, George. Thank you very much. Oh.
My pleasure. Nice job, by the way, on this book and this investigation. Now, what got you interested in the Kennedy probe?
I knew Jim Garrison. I met him in 1969, and I met a man who was so interested in the Kennedy case, even after he had lost, he had put a man named Clay Shaw, who was a CIA operative, on trial in the state of Louisiana. And Shaw was acquitted. The jury found that there was not sufficient evidence. But Garrison didn't stop there. He kept on going. And in fact, his reaction to his defeat at court was, Clarence Darrow lost the Scopes case. Who knows it? Darrow has come down, and we remember him in history as if he had won that case about evolution. And I think Jim Garrison is going to go down in history as someone who did something enormously courageous and really discovered who was behind the assassination of President Kennedy. I knew Garrison over many years. I last saw him in 1989, and he was just as concerned, just as interested in the case as he had been in the early 1960s when he began.
What got him so obsessed with the case, John?
Well, Garrison found out during the weekend of the assassination that a CIA contract pilot named David Ferry, who lived in New Orleans, knew Lee Harvey Oswald well. And on the Monday after the assassination, Garrison's office interviewed David Ferry. David Ferry denied that he knew Lee Harvey Oswald, denied that he had been in Dallas, although we learned that he had been, and my new evidence showed that he had. And Garrison turned David Ferry over to the FBI and the Secret Service. And he thought that those are the bodies that really should investigate the Kennedy assassination. Nothing, of course, was done. When the Warren Commission met, they never even called David Ferry. And so in 1965, Garrison was in Washington, D.C., and he was talking to a friend of his, a Louisiana representative who happened to be on the Warren Commission, Hale Boggs. And Hale Boggs talked out of school. Alan Dulles had told the people on the Warren Commission not to talk about what they heard in the closed sessions, but Hale Boggs couldn't keep quiet, and he told Jim Garrison that the Warren Commission had discovered that Lee Harvey Oswald was an FBI informant, that he was working for the FBI. So he certainly wasn't the pro-Castro Marxist that he claimed to be, that he seemed to be. And then when Garrison read Dwight McDonald's article in Esquire magazine exposing the lies of the Warren Commission, how absurd the conclusions were, he decided to continue and pursue his investigation one more time. So I began writing a biography of Garrison. I went on to write a biography of his investigation. And before I was done, after the 7 years of work on this project, now we're in our eighth year, I was doing my own investigation based on all the new documents. And I've interviewed more than 1,000 people on this case.
Interesting how Hale Boggs was missing in a plane crash in Alaska. They never did find his body, did they, Joan?
Excellent. They never did. And we also have to note that Hale Boggs disappeared over Alaska right after he denounced J. Edgar Hoover on the floor of the House.
Yes, exactly. And he went down in a plane, of course, with Congressman Nick Begich Sr. We know his son quite well. He appears on the show. That was a whole strange situation. His son, Nick Begich, claims that the Boggs and his father were spotted somewhere near the wreckage, probably alive. Nobody ever went to get them or find them.
fascinating story. It really is. Well, Jim Garrison protected Cale Boggs all his life. And when Garrison was asked how he began his investigation, he said, really, it was Senator Russell Long who put him onto the story. Well, when I talked to Russell Long's family, what I found out was that after that famous ride to New York, where they went to a petroleum conference and supposedly Russell Long introduced Garrison to the story, in fact, the reverse was true. When Senator Russell Long got off the plane back in Louisiana, he told his family Garrison chewed his ear off about the assassination. So Garrison used Senator Long as a way of protecting Hale Boggs, who had really talked when he shouldn't have about what had gone on in the Warren Commission. People said that Garrison always looked for the press and always was looking to grandstand. It really wasn't true. He never revealed, for example, what Hale Boggs had told him. Garrison was a person completely different from what the press made him out to be. And I think we have to attribute the discrediting of Jim Garrison right back to J. Edgar Hoover, who issued a document. We have a document now which shows J. Edgar Hoover telling all special agents in charge, quote, give Garrison nothing. And Garrison was bewildered because usually one law enforcement agency helps another. But in the case of the FBI right. in New Orleans, they did everything they could to sabotage Garrison's story.
You like Jim Garrison as a person?
Jim Garrison was not a cozy person. Jim Garrison only wanted to talk about the Kennedy assassination. The last time I saw him, I had cut the cornea of my eye, and I came down to dinner with my face completely bandaged, as if I looked like a mummy. And Garrison sat down. It was 8 o'clock at night. We start talking about the Kennedy case, and this is 1989 now, and how the parade route was changed, and how the mayor of Dallas was really the brother of the second in command to Allen Dulles. And we're talking until 2 o'clock in the morning in the lobby of the hotel. And Garrison never once said, well, what happened to your face? Why is your face bandaged like that? It wasn't personal. It was just that he didn't like small talk. And that's why he really didn't want to be a politician. He said, I never want to kiss babies. Because when David Ferry, who was his chief suspect, died suddenly in February of 1967, Garrison's staff said, okay, this ball is rolling down the hill and we should go back to politics. And Garrison was incredulous. And he said, what do you mean by that? I've just begun.
Why was he obsessed with this case, Joan?
He cared. I think if people said that he wanted money, people said that he was trying to protect the mafia, none of that was true. In fact, I found out by interviewing the people closest to the governor of Louisiana at that time, who was very close to Carlos Marcello, who was the mafia kingpin there of Louisiana and Texas, that Carlos Marcello didn't like Jim Garrison. He wanted him out of office. And the quote that Carlos Marcello said was, Jim Garrison was, quote, unreliable. He really cared. He wanted to find out what happened to the person he called Jack Kennedy. And Garrison was a liberal. Garrison was interested in civil liberties. Garrison was interested in civil rights. Unlike previous district attorneys of Orleans Parish, Garrison was not a racist. Garrison, it was so unusual. When I first met Jim Garrison, he never even said to me, and I was very young at the time, and I didn't even know that he was district attorney. We would walk down the street, and African-American people would greet him, good morning, Mr. Garrison, good afternoon. Knew Mr. Garrison. I couldn't understand why that was so. And only after I was writing Jim Garrison's biography did I realize that the African-American people in New Orleans appreciated him so much. And the coroner of Orleans Parish, Dr. Frank Mignard, who has been in the news so much lately because he's been doing the autopsies of the people who died during Hurricane Katrina, well, Frank Mignard told me that the African-American people in Orleans Parish had three photographs in their homes. One was John F. Kennedy. One was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the other was Jim Garrison.
Oh, my. Was it the fact that a lot of what he uncovered with regards to the people who were involved, who happened to live in New Orleans, was that the reason he jumped on it?
Yes, I think what Garrison said, listen, Lee Harvey Oswald was living in New Orleans from April to September of 1963. He was associated with two CIA contract. Well, CIA contract pilot Ferry and CIA operative Clay Shaw, and the three people were seen together in New Orleans and also north of Baton Rouge. What was this all about? And Garrison said, the implementation of the assassination occurred in my jurisdiction. What should I do? Sit back and not take notice of that? And so he gave up politics. He gave up the opportunity to become governor of Louisiana, which he could easily have done. And he devoted himself exclusively to investigating the Kennedy assassination.
Did the name Jack Ruby ever come up in any of Garrison's investigations?
Garrison was very interested in Jack Ruby. Garrison, contrary to opinion that people have said Garrison investigated exactly to what extent the mafia was involved in the Kennedy assassination. And Garrison discovered that, yes, the mafia was informed of what the CIA was doing, and just as in Operation Mongoose, where the CIA used mafia operatives to try to help them to assassinate Fidel Castro, so the same thing was true during the period of the Kennedy assassination. The CIA informed the mafia. Mafia people were at some of the meetings in New Orleans and outside New Orleans, but it was the CIA that planned the assassination and not the mafia. Jack Ruby, Garrison was well aware, had mafia connections, and mafia was used to bring Jack Ruby into the case. What I discovered, and Garrison didn't know, are so many instances of where Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald knew each other well. And one of my chief witnesses, Thomas Edward Beckham, said after the assassination, how could Jack do that to Lee? Because he was aware and he had been present at times when Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald were together.
I think Jack was told to do it, wasn't he?
Absolutely. Jack Ruby was blackmailed. I think Jack Ruby had no motive. I mean, what we heard at the time in 1963 was Jack Ruby was grief-stricken and was so sorry for Jackie Kennedy that he couldn't help but kill Lee Harvey Oswald. And, of course, this isn't true at all. Jack Ruby was forced to murder Lee Harvey Oswald, even though, and my book is peppered with examples where we see how well Jack Ruby knew Lee Harvey Oswald.
In your opinion, then we're going to come back and talk about Garrison and his quest to try to unravel all this. But in your opinion, Joan, why was John F. Kennedy killed?
I have a long chapter in my book which shows the warfare that John F. Kennedy was involved in with the CIA. This was a life and death struggle. John F. Kennedy was trying to take away the powers of the CIA, to cut the budget, to take away their ability to do the overflights over Cuba. He wanted to take those over himself. He was going to limit the powers of the Director of Central Intelligence. Ironically, George W. Bush has done exactly what Kennedy wanted to do. So there was this, the CIA felt threatened as an institution. CIA was also representing the views of the Pentagon at that time, and the Pentagon wanted a ground war, first in Cuba, and if not in Cuba, in Vietnam. And John F. Kennedy did not want this country to fall into a deficit and then bankrupt itself with a ground war that they couldn't win. So Kennedy's policy was special forces in Vietnam, Green Berets, local military, and if this didn't work, nothing, because he did not want to commit hundreds of thousands of boys to Vietnam. And, of course, the people who wanted to profit from the Vietnam War, the people President Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex, to which we could add the intelligence agencies, these people were determined to have a ground war either in Cuba. Of course, Cuba would have been over in a couple of days, so they profited much more from the long, protracted war in Vietnam.
So you had that situation, you had Cuba, you had the mob. They all hated Kennedy, didn't they?
Well, there was a general hatred of Kennedy because Kennedy was perceived, as I said, as someone who was for civil rights. So this created a great hatred of Kennedy in itself. I think that the brother of Robert Kennedy was not liked by the mafia, but Carlos Marcello, as I said, could not possibly have alone and with his operatives murdered John F. Kennedy. It's preposterous.
How many people, Joan, do you think, including shooters, planners, how many people do you think were involved in this conspiracy?
Well, there were quite a few people. When we look at the people that Garrison brought into his office, we see soldiers of fortune, CIA operatives. We see quite a few people, and we see the top level of the clandestine services of the CIA. And I think I'm not alone. I think even President Harry Truman, a month after the Kennedy assassination, wrote an article on the front page of that radical newspaper, The Washington Post, in which he said that the CIA was running a shadow government. They were making policy. And this was a very thinly veiled attack on the CIA for murdering President Kennedy.
And
it was an open secret that the CIA was involved in that murder. And I had one of Garrison's classmates named Wilmer Thomas, who was a very distinguished man and one of the philanthropists who funds the Metropolitan Opera in New York. And Wilmer went to talk to Arthur Schlesinger, and I said, ask Arthur Schlesinger whom he thinks murdered President Kennedy. And the answer that Arthur Schlesinger gave was this: we were at war with the national security people. So everybody knew that it was the CIA that murdered President Kennedy. The mafia was not the organization that murdered President Kennedy, although J. Edgar Hoover, to deflect attention from the CIA, put out that view, along with the view that Garrison was protecting the mafia way back in the early 1960s.
Yet they may have all had a part in it, right?
Well, I think the mafia provides shooters. The mafia, they had to inform the mafia. But certainly the planning came from the clandestine service of the CIA.
Isn't it ironic, Joan, that even after this 42 years, the guy that a lot of people wanted out was Fidel Castro, who's been in there since 1959, probably one of the longest people to be controlling a country. He's still there.
He's still there, and I think the reason is that there was no real opposition to Fidel Castro in Cuba, which I think anybody who says, well, there was going to be a coup against Castro inside Cuba knows nothing about Cuba at that time. Whatever opposition there was to Fidel Castro were either in jail or else had left Cuba. There was no possibility, and that's where the CIA, I think, was faulted in their intelligence about the Bay of Pigs. Somehow in 1961, they thought that there were forces that were going to join the CIA and overthrow Fidel Castro. Those forces did not exist. They didn't exist in 1961 at the time of the Bay of Pigs, and they did not exist in 1963.
As Garrison begins his investigation, how soon after Kennedy was killed? He dies in 63. When does Garrison start the probe?
Garrison actually started his probe the day of the assassination, when a CIA operative in New Orleans named Jack Martin told Garrison's office that David Ferry knew Lee Harvey Oswald well. And Jack Martin also said, by the way, there's a photograph of a cookout which appeared David Ferry and Lee Harvey Oswald, in case you don't believe me. And that photograph surfaced in the 1990s. I have a copy of it in my book, in which we see Ferry and Oswald together. So Garrison began almost immediately. And then he thought that the FBI would do the investigation. He had no idea that the FBI was going to cover up for the CIA and prevent any investigation from taking place. So Garrison waited 2 years, and then in 1965 he began again after the Warren Report was issued, and he realized that the Warren Report was a cover-up. It was clear that the Warren Commission did no investigation of the Kennedy assassination. And as we later learned through the documents, the federal government sent a Department of Justice lawyer named Herbert J. Miller Jr. to Texas the weekend of the assassination or shortly after, and said to the Texas law enforcement, there is to be no investigation here. Texas law enforcement were going to do an inquiry, certainly, and they were forbidden to do it. And that was illegal because at the time of the Kennedy assassination, it was not a federal crime to assassinate the president. The murder of President Kennedy in Texas was a local homicide, a local murder. And the federal government prevented Texas from doing the investigation. Now the Warren Commission doesn't do an investigation. So here's Jim Garrison noticing that nobody has investigated the murder of President Kennedy. And so here he is in Orleans Parish in his little jurisdiction with practically no money and a handful of people working with him attempting to break this case. And people said to Jim Garrison later, how could you think you could prosecute anyone for participation in the conspiracy to murder President Kennedy in a local state court in Louisiana? And Jim Garrison was very ironic, very humorous in what he said. Well, I guess I thought I was living in the country I was born in.
What happened to Jim Garrison's life as he pursued this investigation?
I think this investigation destroyed his life. It broke his health. He died young. He was constantly harassed. Later, we have evidence that indeed Garrison was correct. The FBI was surveilling all of his assistants and himself everywhere he went, set him up to be accused of being a pedophile. And even after his death, Garrison was being discredited. I found out only recently from one of Garrison's law partners that a major personality from network television called the coroner, whom I mentioned, Dr. Frank Mignard, and asked Ms. Dr. Mignard if he would take some money, he would take a bribe in order to say that Jim Garrison had died of AIDS, that Dr. Mignard had done an autopsy and Jim Garrison had died of AIDS, which was not the case. And in fact, Frank Mignard had predicted that there would be questions about Jim Garrison's death. And so Jim Garrison's family, had asked Dr. Mignard, please do not do an autopsy. We don't want to. And under the Louisiana law, it was not necessary because Garrison was of a certain age. Frank Mignard said, no, I insist. I'm going to do an autopsy. And he did, and he showed me the record. And what Jim Garrison died of was septicemia, which is blood poisoning from the unhealed bed sores, because he'd been in bed for a year because of congestive heart failure. He did not die of a sexual disease. And another thing that I found out, George, is that even Mark Felt, known as Deep Throat, was participating in the FBI's discrediting of Jim Garrison, trying to prove that Jim Garrison was, according to the FBI document, a sex deviant.
We'll be back. We'll talk more about Jim Garrison, and also we'll take your phone calls. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, just a few more clicks left, and then we will no longer have the Perfect Possession CD available to you for free when you subscribe or renew your After Dark newsletter. So take advantage of it. Go to the coasttocoastam.com website or call this toll-free number, 1-888-727-5505. Perfect Possession, an Art Bell interview with the late Father Malachi Martin. It was on exorcisms. Back in a moment. Our guest, Joan Mellon. Joan, did Garrison think that Hoover might have been involved as well?
No, Garrison never really thought that Hoover was behind the planning of the assassination, but he did recognize that Hoover was intimately involved in the cover-up. One of the great finds that Garrison made was that the same people who were involved in the planning were also involved in the cover-up, and he found this out when he discovered how Clay Shaw, his suspect, and David Ferry, his first suspect, took Lee Harvey Oswald up north of Baton Rouge, where Oswald had been instructed to apply for a job in the big insane asylum, term no longer used, the state hospital at Jackson, Louisiana. And this was very mysterious to everyone. Why would Oswald be going all the way from New Orleans? In those days, it was a remote area. It was still a remote area up there to apply for a job in a mental hospital. But this is where Shaw took him. And what Garrison speculated later was that the Warren Commission conclusions that a lone nut, that a crazy person, had murdered President Kennedy, that those views were already being established in the summer of 1963 when Oswald was going to apply for a job at this hospital, and that perhaps from applying for a job at the hospital, Oswald would be seen as acting very erratically, very strangely, mm-hmm. would be considered a patient, and then might run away, and then suddenly be found in Dealey Plaza with a weapon, and then be accused of being an insane person who had shot President Kennedy alone without any Confederates, which of course is exactly what the Warren Report says.
Do you believe Oswald was part of the assassination or was truly a patsy in the whole thing?
Well, George, that's really a very, very important question. Jim Garrison believed that Oswald never fired a shot. I think he's right about that. I think that Oswald certainly didn't believe he was going to be shooting President Kennedy or have anything to do with that. What Oswald thought was that, I mean, Oswald was no saint. What Oswald thought was that he was involved in plots to assassinate Fidel Castro. And that's why when Oswald was arrested in Dallas, the word that he used, I'm a patsy, that's a CIA word, a tradecraft word. I'm a patsy. I'm being set up. And he was very surprised, I think. And what he immediately said when he was arrested in Dallas was the lawyer whom he wanted to represent him was George Apt. Well, Apt was a communist lawyer, and here was Oswald signaling to his CIA handlers, look, I'm still with the program. You told me to pretend to be a communist, mm-hmm. and that's exactly what I'm still doing. Please rescue me. Please help me.
Get me out of this situation.
Yes.
And I bet he was shocked when Ruby was there to fire a shot at him.
Well, of course, because he knew Jack Ruby well. Suddenly, here's Ruby, and he looked him right in the eye. That's right.
He probably thought he was going to try to let him escape or something.
And then suddenly, there it is. Ruby shoots him.
Wild card line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello. George. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, George. Chris, rolling up I-75 in the big rig in Florida.
Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Wow, it's just amazing. I've been trying to call for years to finally get through. I'm going to pull a page out of the George Norrie playbook here and say, follow the money. Just a question for both you and your guest. Since Kennedy was the only president that I know of since the Federal Reserve Act to put out any kind of currency based on a precious metal, i.e. the silver certificates, the silver dollars that were around then, What role might the Federal Reserve have played in all of this? And
good,
I'll take
good
my
question.
Answer off the air.
Good question, Chris. As you know, Joan, President Kennedy was at odds with the Federal Reserve in terms of the how our country was being backed with its money. He wanted it to be backed up by gold and the precious metals. They, of course, wanted to continue to print this paperless this cash without any backing. Might that have been a factor as well?
I think that's a very interesting point, an absolutely excellent point, because it goes along with Kennedy's general view that the country has to be fiscally sound. That's why he didn't want to spend all that money in Vietnam, and he was very cautious. He represented a side of the government that was wanting this country to remain solvent, and as you say, backed up by precious metals, by not inflation, and of course not by that huge deficit. So this is, and I think what Charles de Gaulle said at the time of the Kennedy assassination, many Europeans believe that there was intra-government warfare that led to the assassination of President Kennedy. And the CIA was involved in that, the Pentagon was involved in that, as your guest just, your caller rather, just said, the fiscal issue was involved. All of this was turned against John F. Kennedy.
Isn't it possible that that intra-government fighting is still going on now, that we have this shadow government trying to control things?
Well, this is very interesting, George, because we have the reverse of what we had during President Kennedy's time. The people who, the CIA, had the same bellicose, warlike policies at the time of John F. Kennedy that the current administration has here with the Iraq War. And here, and the CIA today, which has been eviscerated by the present administration, and I think the CIA has been hurt because it brought news that the present government didn't want to hear, is in the position that John F. Kennedy was during his time, not wanting the war, recognizing, for example, I think the CIA these days has recognized that there were no weapons of mass destruction and that there would be what they call a quagmire in Iraq, and that maybe we shouldn't destroy this country fiscally. Should we go into Iraq? And of course, that's been proven true. Halliburton has looted this country in this Iraq war. One of the things I found out, and I should have known, was that Halliburton and the constituted Brown and Root, which was set up in 1962, profited greatly from the Vietnam War, just as they profited enormously from the Iraq War. So the forces here, the George Bush and his administration, accomplished what John F. Kennedy was not able to do, which was bring the CIA under its control. Here we have the Director of Central Intelligence today no longer reporting to the president, and we have this Director of National Intelligence that has to report only to the president, and it's controlled by the president. And we see here Bush recognizing that he had to control the CIA in order to run this country, and run this country really in an authoritarian way, pursuing a war that the people of this country, I don't believe, really want.
However, he was able to control the CIA, or at least that's the appearance of.
Well, that's true. But I think many, many people in the clandestine service have resigned. And the CIA is not what it was. And
no,
during John
true.
F. Kennedy's time, very different.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
I was born in, or I lived in New Orleans during 63. And I share your guest views on Jim Garrison as a really good guy. One of the questions I had is the connection in northern Louisiana that always interested us. In Clinton, Louisiana, it was said that Oswald had been in that town with Clay Shaw to register to vote. And your guest had also touched a little bit on the asylum in northern Louisiana. And one of the things that I never hear talked about is that supposedly a lady was thrown out of a car and the state troopers in that area picked her up. And she was put in that asylum, and several days prior to the assassination, she had told psychiatrists in that asylum that the assassination was going to happen. I was wondering if Joan knew anything about that or had heard anything.
Well,
that's always of interest to us.
I really love that question.
Yeah,
I love that caller, because that's really at the heart of the Garrison story, the incidents that occurred in Clinton and Jackson. The woman to whom you refer was named Rose Sheremy. And she indeed was found on the highway. She was a prostitute and a drug dealer, and she was found on the highway. And she was talking about how Jack Ruby knew Lee Harvey Oswald. She had been a stripper in Jack Ruby's Carousel Club. And here she is, and she's saying, so the Cubans are going to kill President Kennedy. And she knew, she predicted what was going to happen, and it did indeed happen. She was taken to the East Louisiana State Hospital at Jackson, the very place I was referring to, where Oswald had applied for a job. And I think Rose Sheremy was taken there in November of 1963, just at the time of the assassination, predicting it was going to happen, and indeed it did happen. So that really starts my story in the book about incidents in Clinton and Jackson. And I think that this was where Garrison became certain that he was onto the real story.
Did these people ultimately get what they wanted, Joan, after they killed Kennedy?
I think they did. They got the Vietnam War. What was what they wanted? The CIA could continue to do exactly what it was doing. The Pentagon had its war. The people who created the helicopters, the oil interests, the construction interests, the Halliburton, all profited from the war, which then increased astronomically once Lyndon Johnson became president. Almost immediately, thousands of troops were sent to Vietnam, and this continued for a decade.
Are you saying they were all involved in this?
I'm saying that Garrison always said, qui bono, who profits?
And that's what I said,
one
too.
Of your callers said, follow the money.
Yep.
Well, there it goes. The money was going to the people who profited from the Vietnam War once they got John F. Kennedy out of the way.
I say, who profits, who benefits whenever an event occurs? You look
Absolutely.
At that first. If you somehow can rule that out, then you can look at some other possibilities. But you have to look at that first.
And I think that the best part of my book is because I went up to Clinton and Jackson, and I found the people whom Garrison had never interviewed. I found the medical director of the hospital at Jackson. It was very funny because I went up to Clinton, and I'm driving along, and I asked some people, where is the East Louisiana State Hospital at Jackson? Because although it was right off State Road 10, you couldn't find it. And it's this huge Greek Revival building. It looks like the Parthenon. And the people just laughed, and they said, do you mean East? Because the mental hospital up there had a nickname, and still has, East. And I went over there and I met, ultimately, a doctor who was called the father of psychiatry in Baton Rouge, Dr. Frank Silva, an extremely respectable man who was medical director of the hospital during the summer of 1963, and witnessed Oswald in the hospital ranting and raving and acting so erratically that Jim Garrison was right, even without having Frank Silva's testimony, that Oswald was behaving not like an future employee, but like a patient at that hospital, ranting about that he was going to kill Fidel Castro.
Even Bobby Kennedy tried to smash Jim Garrison. Why?
Well, this is very important new information that I have in A Farewell to Justice, because I discovered, and this was the last interview that I did in June, this past June, I went back to Miami and I found one of the Cubans who was very close to Bobby Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy did everything he could to sabotage Jim Garrison's investigation. He sent to New Orleans one of his own operatives, a Department of Justice and CIA asset, National Security Agency asset named Walter Sheridan, who was going to prepare a white paper on NBC television. And he pretended to be investigating the Kennedy assassination. What he was doing was trying to destroy Jim Garrison's case. Well, Jim Garrison was completely befuddled. Why was Bobby Kennedy doing this? And Garrison went on television and said, if it was my brother, I'd certainly want to know what happened to him. And what I found when I went to Miami last June was one of the Cubans close to Bobby Kennedy, and he revealed some amazing information to me, and it's never been printed. He revealed that Bobby Kennedy knew about Lee Harvey Oswald during the summer of 1963, months before his brother was shot in Dealey Plaza. Bobby Kennedy was doing two things. One was Bobby Kennedy was pursuing his own plots with his own group to assassinate Fidel Castro. And this is something, of course, that Bobby Kennedy did not want out. And the other thing was that Bobby Kennedy was trying to find out who was going to kill his brother. Bobby Kennedy knew that his brother's life was in danger. He also knew, and this is really interesting, he knew that the plot was coming from New Orleans. And so Angelo Morgado, the Cuban to whom I spoke, said, this is how he put it, Bobby knew something was cooking in New Orleans.
Did John know that too?
I don't
know. That somebody was out to kill him? Okay.
I assume that President Kennedy, although you'd wonder, because President Kennedy went out there in an open limousine in Dealey Plaza, he should have known because there were threats everywhere. But when Bobby Kennedy found out that Lee Harvey Oswald was an FBI informant, Bobby found that out immediately. He made a tremendous mistake. He said, well, if the FBI is controlling him, he's no threat. And so he ceased to be worried about Lee Harvey Oswald and didn't trace who Oswald's associates were and who was controlling Oswald. If he had investigated, if Bobby Kennedy had investigated who was controlling Oswald, he would have penetrated the plot to murder his brother. And Angelo Morgado and another Cuban who called himself Leopoldo, in the company of Oswald, went to Dallas and talked to a woman named Sylvia Odio, who's a Cuban exile. And outside of Angelo's hearing, this Leopoldo called up Sylvia Odio and he said, you know that Leon Oswald, he is talking about it, some Cuban killing John F. Kennedy because of what he did at the Bay of Pigs, because he didn't support the Cuban invasion at the Bay of Pigs. And Angelo didn't hear this. And, of course, that shows foreknowledge of the assassination, because that occurred in September of 1963. And it also sets up Oswald, because here supposedly is Oswald talking about killing President Kennedy months before the actual murder. And when Angelo told me, when he heard that Lee Harvey Oswald had been arrested for supposedly shooting President Kennedy, he just vomited. He was so sick about this.
Oh my
gosh. That's why some of the Cubans said later, Bobby's got his brother killed.
West of the Rockies.
It isn't true. But Bobby certainly is implicated in the plots to kill Fidel Castro. Certainly, if that had come out, and if Jim Garrison was getting awfully close to that information, if that had come out, goodbye to Bobby Kennedy's aspirations to be president of the United States.
Well, and they finally stopped it one way or another, didn't they?
When he got close to being president, of course, then he had to be assassinated as well.
What?
So by Bobby Kennedy, by not coming forward, in a way, ensured his own assassination as well. If he had come forward with the information, they wouldn't have had to kill him, because everything that he knew would have been out in public.
Where was David Ferry in all this?
David Ferry worked for the CIA. David Ferry knew Oswald well, because Oswald had been a member of the Civil Air Patrol when he was a teenager, and David Ferry was one of the people who helped set up Lee Harvey Oswald. He was involved in all of these plots. He was involved in when maps and diagrams were delivered to one of the Soldiers of Fortune in Dealey Plaza. On the week of the assassination, David Ferry was involved with that. David Ferry rented an airplane to fly to Dallas. David Ferry told the FBI he hadn't been in Dallas for 8 to 10 years. In fact, I have witnesses that show that Ferry flew. Not only did he fly to Dallas, but when he had to take out a loan to rent an airplane because his own airplane was not airworthy, guess who co-signs the loan? And this has never been published before except in my book. Who co-signs the loan that David Ferry makes? Clay Shaw. Clay Shaw, who on the stand in court, denied that he ever knew Lee Harvey Oswald. Who was that loan taken out from? A CIA operative named Herbert Wagner, who also had been in the Civil Air Patrol and who knew David Ferry very well.
Why wasn't any of that ever brought out?
Jim Garrison was silenced. Jim Garrison was discredited. And I think we have to say that the mainstream press in this country, which has been embedded, when we use the word, not since the Iraq War, but really since the Kennedy assassination, has not looked at the documents, has not looked at all the wealth of material that's available in the National Archives, has not interviewed the people. If the people were available to me, they have been available to reporters to look into this. Jim Garrison did everything he could to try to bring out the truth. He failed. When the House Select Committee was created in the late 1970s, the CIA entirely controlled that investigation. And I show in my book how there were documents and letters between the chief counsel of the House Select Committee, Robert Blakey, and the CIA, so that the CIA controlled everything. And when that man, Leopoldo, the man who had visited Sylvia Odio, the man who set up Oswald, was deposed before the House Select Committee, the CIA came in the day of the deposition and ordered the House Select Committee lawyers not to ask him about certain incidents, certain time period right before the Kennedy assassination.
I was told, Joan, a long time ago that one of the reasons why that we were never told that Kennedy was killed in a conspiracy was that we couldn't handle the fact that our president was killed by Americans this way.
That's right, George. That's exactly what we were told. But, of course, that wasn't true at all. I think the American people can handle the truth. We're intelligent, educated people. And I think, as Joseph Conrad writes in Heart of Darkness, just to paraphrase Conrad, that the heavens would not fall. They would not fall if we were told the truth. I think you need an informed citizenry in order to vote, in order to understand our own system, in order for people to have a role in the government. You have to know as much as you possibly can. I think that the reason the American people were not told is because people were covering up for the CIA's role in the assassination of President Kennedy.
Good job, Joan. The book is called A Farewell to Justice. I'm sure Amazon.com, Joan?
Yeah, definitely Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. The publisher is Potomac Books, Inc., and I hope that people will read A Farewell to Justice. I hope if you look at my evidence, the number of pages of documents, and I think we have 80 pages of notes, you can see for yourself, look up these documents, and see what I've done.
Nice job. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there in the cave on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.